go. It's 29 minutes to 10 o'clock on a Thursday morning, and time for Uncensored with Penny Faree, brought to you proudly by IPSS Electronic Security.
Good morning to our listeners, and welcome to another episode of Uncensored. Today we're diving into a number of issues affecting the North Coast, especially those tied to the environment. But before we kick off, I'd like to once again stress to our listeners that Kwadukusa Municipality will be presenting the RDP and draft budget to the public next Thursday. And Kwadukusa's Mayor, Ali Ngidi, tabled the 3.3 billion rand budget 2 weeks ago. Now, some key points for our listeners to take into account: a provision for an average of 8% increase of staff remuneration costs have been included, which is way above inflation. And obviously with the GDP and the 0.1% growth nationally, it's just not justifiable. KDM lost 8.9 million rand in grant funding due to poor performance, and no accountability for poor financial management was ever brought up. And the electricity business unit have not catered for loan funding on the Dukuza substation project in the 25-26 financial year. This project was supposed to be completed this month, but it's nowhere near meeting its completion deadline. And the security costs, obviously, because the February budget was underfunded, there was a deficit in the draw in the adjustment budget in February of almost 200 million, 30 million rand. They had to do some cost-cutting issues, and the security cost reduction was 30 million rand. They've reduced that from the requested security budget. Now, let me just say that DA obviously took issue with this, as a number of people did, in a statement they released this week. The DA caucus leader for KDM and Ward 22 Councillor Privy McCann, she said this is the same business unit that is hemorrhaging close to 750,000 rand per month on security guards for the home of politicians, including the former mayor, who has two allocated close protection officers at the moment, while our current mayor, the new mayor, has been allocated five security guards. So those are round-the-clock security. And she just said, why is a former mayor having a security detail? What warrants this extensive security at the expense of the ratepayers? And please just note that one bodyguard on average costs the ratepayer approximately 27,000 rand per month. And when we were looking at the budget, I did reach out to a number of wards, a number of civic groups and Stanger, and the same issues were recurring in all the wards. Electricity is a big issue. Many wards that are outside the Caesar concession area have no water for many days. The water outages are radical. There's a lot of complaints on the poor potholes, the state of the potholes. Lack of money has been set aside for a lot of service delivery. In our Ward 22, more than half of the streetlights are still not working. There's been no provision for that. And just another thing, the grass cutting costs ratepayer 4 million rand a month on grass cutting services. Each month, residents pay that, and a lot of the wards said that the verges are unkept. A lot of the residents never see any of these grass cutters who are supposedly paying for our 30 wards. So it's very critical that ratepayers attend this meeting. I reached out to Dolphin Coast Residents and Ratepayers Association Chairman Dion Fulyun, and this is his message to our community.
Good morning, Penny, and to all your listeners. My apologies, I can't be in the studio today. Thursday mornings are always our big outreach soup initiatives, and we spend quite a bit of time in Okobongo and Shamwaya. As far as the RDP is concerned, our priorities remain outstanding large capital projects, and in particular, the remaining projects for the disaster funding grants that we've received, the Dukuza Power Substation, and the SCADA Substation. We have been concerned about delays on all three of these over several years, and we are not going to rest until these are done. Dukuza and SCADA in particular are key to unlocking better service delivery, particularly when it comes to electricity supply for our region. Rather than taking on any new projects, we'd like to see that these are brought to completion and to see our existing infrastructure given the attention it so desperately deserves in terms of repairs and maintenance. No point in trying to build new if we can't maintain what we already have. And no point in having the money in the bank for current projects and they're being delayed by several years. The main obstacle in the way of achieving better service delivery for our community is the total lack of credible and capable leadership that we have at our municipality, especially when it comes to big projects. We are severely lacking individuals with a vision and the people management and project management skills to deliver the outcomes that we need. The idea of consequence management is a complete fiction at KDM, and there has been no accountability for poor performance. How can electricity losses, which we are now projecting could reach about 400 million this year, be allowed to be ballooned to such an astronomical figure with no consequences and bonuses paid for? Where is the leadership to drive the mitigation strategies to deal with this? And these are just some of the examples that we have and areas that we are concerned with that has very little oversight and very little credible management. This brings us to our very important upcoming Imbizo, which is taking place on Thursday, the 24th of April at 6 o'clock at the Umshlali Prep School. Imbizos are one of the most important platforms of public participation within the local municipality government framework. This is your opportunity as a resident to have your say and to interact directly with the political and administrative leadership. We are calling on every community-minded resident to turn up, and turn up in your numbers on the 24th to physically show KDM that we are united and demand a better service. We will not subsidize the skyrocketing electricity losses and be subjected to rate increases that are nearly twice that of other local municipalities in our area. There's no requirement to get up and speak. DOCRA will lead the way, as well as our partners in the Kwadakuza Organized Residents Alliance. And we need your presence to fill that hall to overflowing. So please save the date, Thursday the 24th of April, 1800. Bring your family, your friends, your neighbors, and everybody in your network so that we can show up together in solidarity against poor management and excessive rates increases. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so it's very important, and we'll keep reminding residents and ratepayers of this very important BISA that's going to be taking place. So in the face of ongoing government failure to maintain critical infrastructure and natural resources, communities and private companies are increasingly stepping up. So from volunteer cleanup groups working to restore riverbanks and beaches to local businesses investing in sustainable tourism initiatives, people are taking matters into their own hands. Joining me in studio today are Rob Hesketh and Jason Kobush, both community activists and environmental advocates. Rob chairs the Sheffield Eco Community Conservancy, and Jason is also involved in local initiatives focused on protecting our coastline, improving infrastructure, and holding government accountable. Now, I didn't know that the North Coast is very reliant on tourism, and while Ballita was once known as a small seaside town, it's grown rapidly in recent years and now homes major states, expanding industrial zones, and obviously we've got a very fast-growing population, one of the fastest in the country. I don't know if it's a PR spin or it's based on real data, but one thing's for sure, this isn't the sleepy beach town it used to be. And a report commissioned by Enterprise Alembe last year revealed that tourism contributes a massive 6 billion rand to our economy. And that kind of economic boost doesn't happen automatically. It depends on well-maintained public infrastructure, particularly along the coastline. And beach tourism accounts alone for 59% of all visits to the region. So when infrastructure and basic services are neglected, it doesn't just affect quality of life, it threatens livelihood. Now, Rob, we need to bring you in this discussion when we keep kicking off. Can you tell us more about what these neighborhood initiatives are doing? And most importantly, how sustainable are these community-led models of environmental stewardship in the long run?
Hi, Penny. Firstly, thank you for having me on here. This is a wonderful platform, and I really appreciate it. And thanks to Life and Style for having us here to talk about these issues. I think that from my personal experience of this community-led organizations that are taking it upon themselves to get engaged in stewardship of the local ecosystems and environments, we really are quite, you know, we're quite blessed in that we have a wonderful community resident here in the North Coast. I've been like sort of in my whole life, I've spent time in Salt Rock, and I've moved back to the North Coast recently from the Western Cape. And when I moved back here 2 years ago, you're absolutely right. It is a different town. It's not the sleepy seaside village that it used to be. Where I live now used to just be sugarcane as far as the eye could see. And that's not very long ago. I mean, like 5-10 years ago, you know. And the speed at which it's growing is difficult to believe. The reality of that is that we're introducing a lot of factors. There's a lot of development. There's a lot of land that is being repurposed, rezoned and repurposed. There's a lot of farmland that's being turned into residential land. And often this has like positive implications because, you know, developers, they like to develop like ecologically sensitive areas, you know, like they like to develop the Zimbali model of an eco-lodge or an eco-forest.
Yeah.
And that creates a lot of opportunities for people who are like interested in the natural resources of South Africa, our environment primarily, to move here and get involved. You know, there's wonderful communities. Myself, I'm involved in a community that is more established than that. And it emerged in Sheffield because there was a need for community organization to fill the gap where the municipality wasn't providing services.
Now, what sort of services are we talking about in terms of the beach beach maintenance?
So originally the Sheffield Eco Community started as a neighborhood watch club, basically, but it quickly developed, and now one of the sort of major focuses, we still obviously do the neighborhood watch, but what I'm involved in and what I'm here to talk about is the conservancy part of it. So the Sheffield Beach Eco Community takes responsibility for managing the beaches and the road verges, maintaining the alien invasive species, like keeping those out, trimming the trees back. All of this is work that technically is municipal work that should be being supplied by or the service provided by KDM.
And is this a volunteer service?
But what we do is we raise, you know, our residents in Sheffield, we have wonderful community response, and I think we're sitting at about 70% or 80% of our residents contribute voluntarily, a very small amount every month.
Yeah.
And really, it's next to nothing. They pay like 200 rand a month, you know. And from that, we are able to employ a full-time beach cleaner. We're able to employ a team of tree cutters and verge cleaners who they're not full-time, but they work for us part-time.
Funded by the residents.
Funded by the residents. And the results are clear. The more that we do, the more the area benefits, and the residents can see the results, and they willingly make the contribution because it raises property values. It makes the area nicer to live in, nicer to drive on the roads. You know, the bush isn't encroaching. People are not forced to walk in the middle of the road, and the beaches are clean.
Yeah.
And
do you have buy-in from Kodakuza though, when you've set up this initiative? And my worry is long-term sustainability. If the obviously, fundamentally, the responsibility lies on local government. But now we've seen the lack of services that is happening on the ground, and residents are just so tired they're taking up their own initiatives. Does Kodakuza step in at any time and support these community initiatives?
So we're very aware and considerate of the fact that Kodakuza has a large area to manage.
30 wards,
30 wards is a lot, you know, and they do have finite resources to do that. And we're also aware of the fact that the Sheffield area is like clearly a more affluent one, you know, and as a result of that, the residents in Sheffield are a little bit better situated to make a voluntary contribution.
Yeah.
So we don't have a relationship with Quatro Cruz that is adversarial. We work together very well. They support us where they can. And we work directly with them when we need their services to like remove tree cuttings and stuff like that. If they are able to, they will willingly provide it. Yeah. They've never been unwilling to come to the table. The only problem is that they are just largely under-resourced. With regards to tree cuttings, I know that they have two trucks at their disposal. So those two trucks are servicing from Blythedale down to Tongaat River.
I think those are outsourced. Is it the full? Are they full-time under Quatro Cruz?
They're part of the Quatro Cruz municipal. But one of them I know is not functioning, and they're just not. You know, like they don't have this internal support from their own budget and administration. Yeah. So understanding that we are prepared to do what we can as a community. And I think this is really what's important, and to answer your question about sustainability. The fact that this organization, and there are many others like it, is motivated by and run and funded and managed by volunteer resources within the community just proves the fact that the residents here are on board with what is needed to be done.
Yeah, and you know what? They get things done. I mean, I walk along Christmas Bay many times. Not recently, I have to admit, there's a lot of plastic on the beach at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe you can chat a little bit about that. I did notice also some grass or some plants as well.
Yeah.
All along that stretch of beach. Is that possibly, the washing from rivers? I don't know. I know, Jason, you're quite an expert on rivers, or you can take that, Rob. What is that?
So what we've had recently with the heavy rains is we get a lot of like flotsam and that is like come down from the rivers.
Yeah.
So the vegetation that you've seen on the beaches is largely water hyacinth, which is an invasive species. You'll have heard about it on the Heart to Beers Port Dam. It's been a big problem.
Yeah. Is that not caused from sewage, raw sewage? Well, does that not grow in that sort of environment?
It'll grow anyway. The sewage doesn't help.
Yeah.
But it's a species that was brought here for people to keep in fish tanks and ponds. Okay. And it's escaped into the wild. And it's meant to be in the Andes. And the environment that it has here is just, it just encourages it to grow overly much. And so it is rapidly choking up our waterways. And I think that, look, the alien invasive plant species is a big problem in KwaZulu-Natal. Statistics indicate that the cost to the local economy of alien invasive species is upwards of 50 million rand a year, and it's very difficult to quantify that because there's no way that we can measure water loss through transpevaporation and other like costs of erosion and stuff on farmland. It's just difficult to quantify. So it indicates that we might be looking at closer to 5 billion like rands a year. But that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
I think if we look at the plastic on the beaches, there's only so much that the community groups can do. I know that there was a community group in Salt Rock from Little Maritzburg Road, and they actually themselves hired a skip and like motivated the cleaning of their beach area. The skip had to come back twice, you know. It stood there for 2 weeks and residents filled it up, and then they took it away and they brought it back and residents filled it up. In Sheffield, there's a big problem. I noticed that after Christmas Bay, when you go north, the beach strip in front of Seaton is largely hasn't been cleaned at all.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well.
And really, it's a big problem. When we get plastic on our beaches, people often think, oh, the plastic will just disappear and go and like sit in the sort of Pacific trash vortex in somewhere.
That's what
at sea.
I think.
But actually, what research shows happens is that the plastic travels around the shorelines and slowly breaks down. So if you see plastic on the beach today, then in the middle of the night you're going to get a high tide, and most of that plastic is going to get taken back out, and then it's going to travel north, and it's going to end up on a beach somewhere north of us, and it's going to travel in this way around the shoreline of the whole world, slowly breaking down into smaller and smaller pieces, which are very problematic for our marine ecology and just in general. Our best practice would be, as soon as the plastic arrives on the beach, to pick it up, remove it, and take it to recycling sites like we have all over. Unfortunately, to do that, it just requires hands and feet. Yeah. And personally, I feel like it's low-hanging fruit for the municipality. I'm like 6 billion rand a year in tourism is a huge number. And let's be real, our tourism hinges on the beautiful beaches that we have. And I just got to, you know, think that what are we prepared to do to not only keep the beaches beautiful, but also to keep our community sustainable.
Yeah, you know, the 4 million rand that they do on grass cutting, that's 4 million rand in the budget every month paid by the ratepayers to Quadukuza. And there's been so much contention from a lot of people saying that that is one department that is very subject to corruption and tenderism and cronyism. Wouldn't that be amazing if they took a quarter of that, even like, you know, not even a million, and created, you know, employment by taking full-time people and making sure that they do clean. I mean, we've seen the Dolphin Coast waste management. They've also private-public partnership where they're employing people to sweep the verges. And there are times, I have to be honest, that I've seen a whole group of people sweeping a very, very neat road which doesn't require any sweeping. So I would imagine if it would be possible to take some of these resources and possibly put them to better use, especially around the areas that are, you know, populated by tourists and obviously visitors and the community. Now, Jason, you took me on a fact-finding mission last week. You know, the water quality has been an issue. We lost the Willards Beach because our blue flag status was taken away by WESA last year because of the quality of our water. And obviously, there have been issues with a lot of, you know, the storm waters going into our oceans. But you said the real problem was coming from upstream, from the waterworks, from Tonga. So we went there to just see how it is. And the picture that I saw was very, very bleak. Can you just tell us a little bit of what your mission is and what, you know, going forward, what needs to be done?
Thank you, Penny. So just to put it into context, it isn't a KDM responsibility because it falls out of their jurisdiction.
Well, that's so what I thought. I thought, oh, you know, Tonga's not really, you know, North Coast, but you proved it wrong.
So if you look at the North Coast as a region, that entails Itakwini, it entails KDM, and taking into the context that we're looking at is just the Dolphin Coast. And you look at Zimbali and the Tongaat River that runs up in towards 62, where this problem is found. And you've got a number of broken sewer line pipes. And sewer going into the rivers flowing downstream into the beachfront. So particularly around Zimbali, you'd have that problem. But where all of this stems to is to say, you know, KDM, would you punt to Itakwini to actually have them fix their problem? Because it directly affects the tourism within the Dolphin Coast.
Yeah, how so? Because...
So, I mean, no one really wants to swim in unclean water.
Yeah, it's called organic matter. And it does. So you saying, you know, the water, the sewage works from Tongaat, which was obviously washed away during the floods, and there's been massive media attention on it. I think the Green Hawks also got involved recently. We were there. I saw there were pipes that were pumping raw sewage was going into these water streams, and just a few meters down the down along that little river, there were kids. They were like small little kids with their fishing rods in that same water where the raw sewage was filtering right through. I mean, it was very eye-opening and very horrific to notice. And this is the water that comes through the river into our ocean and then obviously gets pulled upstream with the tides. And does it not get swept out? How is that what's causing the water quality?
So I don't know which way it really flows, but all I know is that it ends up on a portion of the Dolphin Coast, particularly around Salmon Bay. And if we look at unifying the Dolphin Coast to, you know, punt towards Itakwini, particularly Ward 62, to say to them, listen, fix your pipes because it does affect us, particularly around the tourism side. So that's the only real concern I have there. I know the other organizations like Litterboom, they're doing a great job in trying to provide a responsive effort in trying to collect the litter before it gets to the beachfront. And then what Rob mentioned there, there needs to be somewhat of a reactive incentive to, once there's a heavy rain, I know Litabum does have the problem where should the water level rise, the plastics do flow over,
yeah,
and then they do land up on the beach, and then they do circulate beachfront to beachfront to beachfront. And all of this really opens the door, and I know Privy punted it as well, for public-private partnerships. And, you know, it can open the door for employment, and you can have 10 guys, but without management being effective on the employment, you kind of have this, you know, 10 people standing around a particular site, not actually working towards it. So management is really crucial on that. So yeah, having that public-private partnership. And yeah, you touched on a few things with...
You know, another issue that I know you both have joined the DOCRA Environmental Committee. And what we were chatting about, when you go into a lot of these informal settlements, there's a lot of litter. It's the litter is massive. And then along the way, you'll see a skip. And at that skip, you'll see litter just surrounding that skip. There's all these massive bags around that. So I did a story a while ago I first noticed it during COVID, when I was in a lot of these informal settlements, and then when we had the insurgency, been in there many times. And what I noticed was that the little children are responsible for getting rid of the litter. So when I saw that, I thought, okay, that makes sense now. So you go there and you see that the skips are empty, and there's all the trash bags around the skips, where we obviously they're too short to reach up and put the bags in there. So this is an initiative that you guys are possibly looking at, just experimenting with. Is that something that you've taken on now?
Yeah, I think that's it's a very good place to draw focus.
Yes.
I think the bottom line is that we feel like the more informal communities are vastly underserved by the KDM municipality.
Yeah.
You know, they're not getting the services that they are due as citizens of our country.
Yeah.
And one of those services is waste removal and waste processing, you know. And the immediate result of the fact that nobody goes in there to take the rubbish away is firstly that households burn. So typically what you see is you see a trash pile that is created, and then when it gets to a certain size, it gets set fire to and it gets burned down. And then this process happens again. And I don't need to explain to you how damaging and toxic and just generally unsavory that practice is.
Yeah.
It's also dangerous just to have, you know, random trash fires everywhere.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is, as you say, you know, where there is a response, it's often in the case where a skip is placed, and when the skip is full, it will be removed. We are experimenting with building a kind of like a staircase access that will be portable, that we can then place next to the skips, so that they can actually be used by the young children who are, you know, doing the actual physical work of throwing the trash away. But it's more, I think that we can do that, and that's a Band-Aid solution. And it will make a difference. You know, ideally what we want to do is we want to create an environment for everyone on the North Coast that is conducive to a happy and healthy way to live.
Yeah,
you know,
and protecting our beaches. I think these initiatives are, you know, we're going to be driving them through a lot of the civic organizations, and seeing how we can get the public and private partnership to band together to try and get this, you know, problem under control. But you know, this is a wrap for today's show, but I just want to remind everyone that the power to shape our future does lie in the hands of our communities. And if we stand up and speak out and make our voices heard, we can hold our leaders accountable and ensure that our communities get the attention and resources they deserve. So we need to keep pushing for change, because when we speak with one voice, as Dr. says, we can make a real difference. So appeal to everyone to make sure that they do come to the public meeting next Thursday. And I think these initiatives that we have through the various communities, we are going to be, you know, giving people an opportunity to join and possibly pool resources together to see if we can, you know, make it bigger and better. Thanks for joining us today's show.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Uncensored with Penny Faree, brought to you proudly by IPSS Electronic Security.